hello. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. This is the very special Monday Pickups Edition. Week 8 roughed us up, so we're going to have some work to do on this show. I am, of course, Andy Behrens, here to guide you through this absolute minefield of a waiver wire featuring many great names from 2014, 2015. It's ugly out there, kids. I am joined, as usual, by multi-sport fantasy legend Scott Pianowski. Scott, how are you, sir?
Doing great. I'm disappointed I'm not getting the red-haired Andy Behrens, but I appreciate you. You know, look, you wanted to inspire your Bears in any way you could. You thought if you were to provide an Andy Dalton type of menace to get Justin Fields going, that was exciting. Yeah, it's nice to see some hope for the Bears. That's what I wrote about yesterday. The Bears lost, but it was just nice to see Fields play like a first-round pick. They finally unveiled the real plays, right? The plays they haven't been using. They finally put them on the move and give them some easier reads, some boot action. That was a fun game. You know, Garoppolo and Fields were two quarterbacks I didn't have a lot of trust in into week 8. But obviously, look, we can talk about Fields later maybe. But today is shrouded by the Derrick Henry news. And this guy was on pace for a legendary season. That's off the table. We need to appraise the wreckage in Tennessee and try to figure out what we're doing here.
Yep. Into the smoldering ruins of week 8 we go. We are going to get to Justin Fields later. Very much enjoyed your booms bus piece. But we gotta start right here at the top with the Derrick Henry news. He entered week 8 on pace to actually break Eric Dickerson's long-standing single-season rushing record. He was going to challenge Chris Johnson's record for scrimmage yards as well. This was an absolutely historic season in process. It's still going to be a couple weeks before anybody takes back the rushing lead, I believe, from Derrick Henry. Incredible season he was having. The early word on the injury is, I believe, a Jones fracture. The surgery is going to, heck, he may have had surgery by the time you actually listen to this podcast. It's coming on Tuesday. He will almost certainly be sidelined for a chunk of time. We can talk about this a little bit. The team is talking 6 to 10 weeks. Initially, to me, I will say that 6 sounded very aggressive, but I was messaging sort of backstage with Dr. Sarah Edwards, who has done some work for Fantasy Football Live in the past and is sort of a go-to of mine for injury information. When in the rare instances that a fantasy expert doesn't have enough injury information, I turn to actual doctors. And she's worked for multiple collegiate teams. And she was actually saying that the recovery timeline on this injury, just sort of generically across the board for D1 athletes of late, has been like 3.6 weeks. So I'm not saying that definitely he should be back in a month. I'm just saying that maybe by the end of the regular season is plausible. Now, he's a running back, right? He's not just anybody, and he's the busiest running back in the sport. So that's a concern. I'm just trying to give people a little bit of a reason for hope. Certainly want to give Titans fans a reason for hope that even if this extends through the regular season, that perhaps their postseason hopes are not also dashed.
I don't have anything to add there. I defer to the doctors. It sure seems like Derrick Henry's fantasy season is over, but I guess you have to maybe just hold him for that probationary period until we have more information. But it's hard to imagine him playing another fantasy game this year. And just as a fan of history, as a fan of the NFL, I was underweight on Henry. I had Henry in a couple of teams where I can't win that much. A couple of industry leagues where there's no money at stake, and you know, I'd like to do well, but so this didn't personally hurt me, but just as a fan of the league and of history and of Derrick Henry being a unicorn, right? I mean, we're in this time where we're like, oh, running backs don't matter. And, you know, we downplay the positions. Like, well, Derrick Henry's one of the exceptions to that rule. And I just feel sad that we're never going to get to see what would have happened, what his final log would have been. A player, there's nobody like Derrick Henry in the league. You know, if you want to compare Derrick Henry to somebody, you have to go back, you know, to generations, into like Earl Campbell or somebody.
Stylistically, you really have to go back to Earl Campbell. There's not very many other comps for him.
Although, I will say that Derrick Henry, who often you would say runs angry, the Titans have already made a move to get somebody who runs angry. Unfortunately, he's not anywhere near the peak of his career like Derrick Henry is. But I thought the Ravens would sign all the legacy backs from 2014, but it sounds like Adrian Peterson got away. Just did Baltimore actually interview or give a physical to Peterson to work him out at some point? I think they might have, but he didn't sign with Baltimore, and it looks like he's going to be hooking on Tennessee, the last I saw.
Yeah. So reports right before we jumped on this podcast, right, are that Adrian Peterson has signed with the Titans. He pairs presumably with, Jeremy McNichols is almost a difficult one to talk about because he was way back in the Boise State days. McNichols was a like full usage, full workload guy. He's been basically the receiving back for the Titans. And the receiving back for the Titans is not particularly busy, right? It's not like a high usage position or anything like that. On the season to this point, Derrick Henry has carried the ball 212 more times than Jeremy McNichols, who has seen exactly 7 carries. He's fine. He was a good college player. We had hopes for him once upon a time, and he's been, you know, strictly a rotational guy with Tennessee. He's presumably going to have to see a bunch of work, at least in these first couple weeks, because they're surely not going to throw Adrian Peterson into a 16-carry, 18-carry workload. Peterson, at this stage, really at any stage of his career, profiles more as an early down runner. He was almost 4 yards per carry for the Lions when last we saw him. I mean, he's 36, super high mileage, but you know, he's an all-time great, and those guys do tend to age a little bit differently. And he's been fine in bursts over the last few years. I think he's still got a little bit of juice. He can get you through a few weeks. The Titans have a nice cushion in the division, of course, but they, you know, are thinking beyond simply a division title, I would think, at this point. Peterson and McNichols, how do you sort those two out? Does it depend on fantasy format for you when you're adding them?
You know, I just was checking. I should have checked this earlier, but as you were talking, to see when Tennessee's bye week was, I knew they hadn't had it yet. It turns out it's not until week 13. That's what this team screamingly needs right now, is a bye week to get reorganized, yeah, to get Peterson acclimated or whatever their roster looks like. The trading deadline, of course, I believe is Tuesday also, right? So there's a possibility. We don't see a lot of trade. The trading deadline in the NFL is almost always a dud. It's fun to talk about. Our old friend Doug Farrar did a piece recently of 5 trades you'd like to see. I'm sure Frank Schwab's probably done 17 of those, knowing the volume that guy puts up. And we'll be talking to Frank in 24 hours about some football stuff. But, you know, Peterson, it was trendy to bash him when he was on the football team or when he was on the Lions. And I thought, you know, for a guy at the juncture, at the stage of Peterson's career, the fact that he could still go out and get 3.6 yards a carry or whatever he was getting and handle 15 touches a game, 20 touches a game, I thought he played very much better at that. Most guys are long since retired in their mid-30s, you know, and Adrian Peterson still had just like a speck of value to a real-life NFL team. I thought that was something. Tennessee is the team that wants to think back to their win over Seattle, right? They got down multiple scores. I said, okay, now let's establish the run, you know. They can't play the same way with any other back because no replacement is going to be Derrick Henry, but I could see a scenario in a couple of weeks where Peterson has projectable 12 to 15 touches a week. And that's a currency in fantasy football. There just aren't that many backs anymore who touch the ball. The bell cow is just about a vanishing thing. Even the bell cows we like, you know, they seem to get hurt a lot. So if you can get to 10, I think 10 touches is the magic number for me. If I can get to 10 touches before the game starts, that you already have that in your back pocket, that makes you at least a lower end RB2 or higher end RB3. I mean, I've even had to, you know, tiptoe around the Houston Texans backfield to try to see, is there 10 touches here? Right. I can't seem to find them, but I'm always looking for them. And I thought maybe the Mark Ingram trade would have opened them up. It turns out first game that wasn't the case. So I think Peterson could be a low end RB2 or high end RB3. I'm willing to hold out hope for that.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I think that Adrian Peterson, while not the splashiest fantasy ad, and it's not going to be any fun setting waiver claims this week for sure, but there's a clear path here to a dozen touches a game at a minimum. And I think that has obviously a lot of value. I would assume that McNichols' workload trends up. We don't always see that, especially when somebody is performing, you know, to expectations as a receiving back. Kenneth Gainwell. Sometimes they just retain that role, and they don't necessarily move up a backfield hierarchy in the way that we have, you know, necessarily plans for them. So that may not happen. Peterson is not somebody I'm gonna break the bank for. Neither is McNichols. Mike Vrabel has already talked about it's funny to hear him talk about it. And he was very candid with the Henry injury and the fallout and all that. But he was basically saying, you know what? A lot of teams, they run these committees, and you know, obviously Titans fans haven't seen a lot of that during the Derrick Henry era, but in fact most teams run committees, and the idea of a bell cow runner is super rare. That's like, you know, it's like 5-6 guys in the league, and we just lost another one of them. So bad news all around. There's no single player that you're going to replace Derrick Henry with, obviously. What do you like, if you've been leaning on Derrick Henry in fantasy, number one, you probably have a good record. You're probably well positioned. There's no way to replace him. Like, we're going to talk about some other waiver wire running backs in a minute here, and those guys are also not adequate replacements for Derrick Henry and everything that he was giving you. What's your thinking right now? Is your thinking just navigate the next 4 or 5 weeks and see what the Henry timeline looks like? Is it, I have to go out and trade for a superstar running back because that's the only way I win? What are you thinking as somebody who's got Derrick Henry on a roster?
Most of the teams in my leagues that have Henry are your first place teams, your upper echelon teams. You're dealing from a position of leverage, so you probably don't have to do something rash. You probably have to think, oh, okay, now I'm screwed. So who's my most marketable player? I better trade him for 2 or 3 starters. I mean, obviously every situation is different. You know your league's policies, your league structure, your league trading habits more than we do, but I think you're probably in a position of leverage, and remember that. And this is what fantasy football is. You know, Russell Wilson got hurt for the first time in his career a few weeks ago, and that was a trickle-down effect in Seattle. There's been all sorts of attrition at the wide receiver position. There's never any good tight end. Well, there's like 3 good tight ends in the NFL, it feels like. Fantasy football is a game of reaction. It's a game of trying to be just a little bit ahead of the guy next to you, just to be a little bit more right. You can be wrong so many times. I mean, I faded Tyler Lockett this week. I mean, yep, he caught like his 27th pass. You can be wrong on so many things and still have a good week, still have a good season. Just keep doing. Derrick Henry, manager, you're probably 6-2 right now, or 7-1, or 5-3. You might be 8-0. Okay. You know, you're dealing from a position of strength. You're dealing from a position of leverage. Keep that in mind. Just do what you do. Do your diligence. Try to be smart. Try to be a week early on stuff. Try to buy at the bottom of the fab pool, you know, with your offers, not at the top of it. There's not going to be a two-handed shove player. There's nobody on this list that we're going to talk about today who I think would be a two-handed shove. I have to get this guy. So just try to keep making good decisions and don't freak out. Now, if you're in a keeper league, now you have an interesting choice, right? Because you may be near the top of the standings. Yeah. You're probably looking at no Henry for the rest of the year. Is it worth it to trade future Henry to win now? Which I would say, it depends on what you get. But if I had Henry in any kind of a keeper format and I was in a position to win with him not getting hurt, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to win this year and I'm just going to say goodbye to Derrick Henry, because you don't know about running back timelines. It gets early on everybody quicker than you think. It gets late real early on running backs, you know. They just don't age that well. And it's ghoulish to say it, and I take no joy in it. But if I had Henry in a keeper league, man, I would be, and granted, a lot of people are going to send you joke offers, and I'm not saying, you know, take a really bad, you know, take a 45-foot three-point shot or something like that. Work the ball around, see what you can get. But that's where I'd certainly be looking to make a trade, is if I was in a keeper league and was sitting on Henry.
I'm really glad that you said all that, and I'm, you know, particularly the notion that if you've got Derrick Henry on a roster right now, and this is true for my Derrick Henry teams, they're 6-2, like, I'm sitting just fine. And it is an important reminder that you don't have to enter panic mode. You don't have to enter desperation mode when you're literally at the top of the standings. You do, like, the waiver wire, as you've described it before, it's like your lawn, and it just grows back every week. And, you know, there's fresh stuff all the time, right? Like, we're going to find something over the next 4 weeks. If we don't, there's going to be some low level trade that you can make to navigate your way to the playoffs, but you've still got the edge. Just because you've lost Derrick Henry does not mean that you've actually lost leverage in this thing. You're still probably at the top of the standings and well situated.
And as ugly as the first round has been this year, you still may end up feel like at the end of the year that the 2 months you got from Henry was worth it.
Yeah, no question about it. That's, I mean, that's how dominant this season has been. That's how ridiculous this season has been. We have one other piece of odd news, somewhat surprising news to get to before we dive into the rest of the pickups. And that is that we've already had a trade. Now, by the time you listen to this podcast, there may be a handful of other trades because the trade deadline is on Tuesday. But Von Miller, that's a big name. He was dealt to the Rams. That team continues to just be absolutely indifferent to first round picks, second round picks, early picks. I don't think they have a first rounder until like 2024 or something like that. So Von Miller and Aaron Donald together, that seems pretty fair. It would also seem to signal that Denver is open for business. So perhaps we can reasonably hope for that Melvin Gordon trade sometime.
Right. We talked about just a second ago, the Derrick Henry manager maybe being all in the win this year. The Rams, they're not worried about the future. They're not, you know, I think Sean McVay would just like to take the draft day off if he could. So
he's very close to literally being able to do that. They ain't got much left.
Mike Ditka wanted to do, right? Just get Ricky Williams and go play golf. Yep. In fact, I think the Rams and the Titans play next week. So it's a shame we won't see Donald and Von Miller and all those guys against Derrick Henry. I just want to say one more throwaway about the Titans. Not that anybody needed a reason to believe in A.J. Brown, but they've really upticked his usage in the last 3 weeks. It used to be that A.J. Brown, look, try to make your best game out of 5 to 7 targets. Now they're umping him up to like the 8 to 10 targets he should get every week. And I think he could go to the moon the rest of the way with Tennessee, you would think. Whatever they come up with at running back, they're not going to be as run heavy as they were with Henry. It's A.J. Brown, if I were redrafting now, would be a first-round player. Also, I think Cooper Kupp would be the first player picked in any redraft now. He was probably player 1.02 pre-Henry injury. Now it's a Cooper Kupp world, and you know he's the player now that you hate your opponents have. Because you know, even when he only gets 9 targets, Andy, he still went for $115 and a touchdown. That's just unfair. But yeah, I like what the Rams are doing, right? It's all about the championship flags fly forever. They're trying to win a championship. They went in big on Stafford. They went in big on Jalen Ramsey not that long ago. Obviously, Donald is still near the top of his game, you know, one of the 2 or 3 best defensive players in the world. And Miller still has a lot left. You get him out of a Denver situation where they won yesterday, but they probably aren't going to the playoffs. So he's probably revitalized by this move. I think in a keeper league, I want you to be the Rams, right? I want you to run every keeper league like it's going to disband in a year or two, which is apparently what the Rams think. You know, maybe the NFL is disbanding in 2 years, but go for it, man. I love it. I'm excited to see Von Miller do his thing. And I like what the Rams, you know, you don't want to be in no man's land, right? Once you commit to something, you got to go all the way. The Rams are pot committed for 2021, and I think it's great.
For sure. You mentioned Cooper Kupp. He's another guy who entered week 8, and I believe he's probably still on pace, was on pace to break the single season receiving yardage record. And a little bit of that, of course, is the extra game this year, but still just a monumental season, just a galactically useful season. And he is propping up a handful of my teams as well. Okay, let's dive into the greater running back pool outside of Tennessee. And if you want to, you can try to slot Jeremy McNichols and Adrian Peterson into this group as well. The biggest injuries at running back, obviously Derrick Henry, which we've already discussed, and James Robinson comes away from week 8 with a heel injury. We don't yet know the specific timeline on that thing. It doesn't, obviously, it's not as, doesn't seem as serious as Derrick Henry's issue. Carlos Hyde got a lot of run in Robinson's absence. There's another one of those super exciting names from many years ago. The other guys that I wrote about this week were, of course, Boston Scott and Jordan Howard, the two guys who were actually the sort of 1 and 1A running backs for the Eagles, who just all they did was run on Detroit. You know, I just think about somebody who's like a Miles Sanders investor this year, who had just been waiting and waiting for the Eagles to fully commit to Miles Sanders doing anything. And finally they do. And Sanders is out, right? And the Eagles run for 236 yards against the Lions, just absolutely steamrolled them. And it was Boston Scott, not Kenneth Gainwell, who was getting all of the run in the first quarter. I believe that Gainwell didn't even play a snap in the first quarter of that game. Jordan Howard then spelled him. They basically ended up with the same box score numbers, right? Like a dozen carries for 60 yards, a couple touchdowns each. But Boston Scott appeared to be the number one there. And then also wrote about the aforementioned Carlos Hyde. He's it's got a difficult matchup with Buffalo coming up. And then we probably need to think about these. You mentioned the Ravens veterans before, Devontae Freeman and Latavius Murray. They're coming off a bye, both of them widely available facing Minnesota. I should have mentioned that the Eagles are actually facing the Chargers, and the Chargers have the worst run defense in the league. So for me, Boston Scott would be the clear priority.
Me too. I like that you're trampling all over my Kenneth Gainwell drop that's going to be at the end of the show. Getting in your shots at Philadelphia. Nick Sirianni just wants to hurt the Miles Sanders managers, because that, as you said, that was the game that the Sanders crew was waiting for, where they would, because Philadelphia famously junks the running game at like 1:15 Eastern every week, and this is one week they didn't. And full disclosure here, I picked the Lions to win this game outright. Checking the score, they did not win the game outright. And just the NFL's great, right? Detroit plays super competitive against the Rams. They easily could have won that game. And then they go home, play a Philadelphia team that nobody thinks is special, and get absolutely dump trucked from the opening whistle. Just like the Bengals, right? Have you beaten anybody? Have you played anybody? Well, let's go to Baltimore. Let's have a signature win. And then Cincinnati goes to the Jets and you know, single-handedly, you know, elimination pools, nobody's losing this year. Okay, we'll take care of that. Let's take as many people down as we can. Did you survive that, by the way? You didn't take Cincinnati, did you?
I did take Cincinnati. I'm still probably going to raise a banner for this season in Survivor, because I've never made it to Halloween in Survivor. That's just absolutely ridiculous. What a magical run for me. And so I don't even feel bad, because I know that everybody else exited with me. Like, not just Cincinnati, right? But games around the league. The Chargers took people out. The Bucks took people out. It was a rough week out there.
I want to say 8 underdogs won outright. It was a good week. Mm. The dogs were barking. But obviously Cincinnati was the big survivor juice. So let's spin it back to what we're here to talk about, pickups. Yeah, Boston Scott, I mean, he was the first back out of the chute and did well. And Gainwell played so late in that game and so poorly in that game that he's clearly the lesser option here. I mean, it seems like Jordan Howard should be ready to retire by now, but he's bounced around, and he's been in Philadelphia a couple different times. Scott has the highest touch floor going into next week, and as you said, the Chargers – it isn't just that they have a poor run defense. It's partially because of the talent there, but mostly by design. They say we don't want to allow passing production. We're choosing to be like that Tony Dungy team, right? With the Colts, with like, hey, you want 4.5 or 5 yards of carry? We're giving it to you. Take it. We're going to dare you to have a 15 play drive against us. So I think Boston Scott is sadly, it's scarily going to be like in the running back 2 conversation next week. In fact, it's so scary to me, it's making my throat a little bit sore. But Scott's the first name on this list. When you mentioned the Baltimore backs, maybe I'm kooky here, but I'm still in medium and deeper leagues trying to get some Tyson Williams shares, thinking that he's been their most productive player. I know I think he's missed at least one blitz assignment. He might have had a fumble in there somewhere, the things that all coaches hate. But at some point, I think they need to play to the upside of Williams, which is something that Freeman and Murray don't offer right now. Certainly Le'Veon Bell doesn't offer it, and I'm glad he's not on the script. So in deeper leagues, I'm willing to take a shot on Williams, maybe before it's obvious. He was dropped in a lot of leagues during their bye week. I'm sure all of these guys were, because none of them have enough equity where you probably held them. But I do have some interest in Williams, and I'm hoping James Robinson can come back. I don't want to watch. I've lived through the Carlos Hyde experience. I'm kind of done with it. I'm certainly done with the Urban Meyer experience, which has been no fun, but
it often appears that the Jaguars themselves are done with the Urban Meyer experience.
I'm sorry, has there been any movement in that?
No, it just appears that way, right?
Like okay.
The incredible lackluster play, the utter flatlining against Seattle, like monumentally disappointing week.
Let me just kind of clean up my recos here. I can be proactive on Boston Scott. I'm not going to elbow people out of the way, but I can be proactive on Scott. I would need my price to be met on Howard. I'm trying to get Williams for a low offer in the Baltimore backfield, and I'm going to get more intel on Robinson on Jacksonville before I make my offers. I'd prefer not to go the Carlos Hyde path, but depending on what I've lost and what my roster looks like for week 9, I'll address that Tuesday night when I set my Yahoo offers. But Scott's the proactive guy. Williams is the sneaky, you know, maybe the secondary ad or the $0 offer, and I'd prefer not to go to Jacksonville if I don't have to. I really need to get Adrian Peterson for a low offer or, you know, a zero offer, and I'm not going to probably get that. So I don't think I'll be in on Adrian Peterson. That's not a proactive pick for me. I just wanted to throw that out there too.
Unbelievably, it's taken me over 20 minutes into this podcast to get to the other major injury from week eight, and that was Jameis Winston's season-ending ACL injury. Just brutal to see. Happened on a horse collar tackle. You could tell how well liked the guy is because players from both teams obviously coming over to him while he was still on the field. So rough news there for Jameis. Not that he'd been some huge fantasy factor, not that the Saints passing game was some huge fantasy juggernaut or anything like that, but a bummer to see in somebody that you might have reasonably streamed heading into week eight. Definitely creates an interesting quarterback situation there going forward. Sam Darnold, another injury, suffered a concussion. Not sure yet, obviously, how long he's going to be out. The ads that I wrote about here are messy, and these would all, with one exception, be sort of 1 week ads. We should almost separate the Saints from the rest of this discussion because Taysom Hill has missed some time with a concussion, but he's believed to be returning in week nine. They've got a super friendly stretch of games coming up just in terms of opponent matchups. I believe it's Atlanta, Tennessee, Philly, something like that. They've got Atlanta coming up next. Obviously that's exploitable. Taysom was just such an interesting player last year. Over four games, he was basically giving you 40 to 50 rushing yards per week, a bunch of rushing touchdowns, basically a rushing touchdown for every game he played. He wasn't nothing as a passer. He was giving us 200 plus yards per game. I think he completed over 70% of his throws. He was fine. He wasn't a surgeon by any means, but he was okay. And he's the guy with fantasy upside. Now they might very well, and in fact, it would be hard to pivot away from Trevor Siemian after getting a sort of signature win against the Bucs, right? So I would expect them to roll with Siemian in week nine against Atlanta. Not yet sure about that, but to me, Taysom Hill is the guy who, if he falls into actual playing time and starts later in the season, he's somebody that we can reasonably think of as a top 12-ish fantasy quarterback.
Sure. I mean, we didn't see it in week eight, but the story of Jalen Hurts all year has been the gap between his real-life fantasy value and his fantasy value. And Taysom Hill is ready to step into that type of player, that type of situation where is he a long-term solution here? Maybe, maybe not, but Peyton has familiarity with him. He's been successful with him before. By the way, hats off to Sean Payton just doing.
How about it? It's interesting
how the Patriots and the Saints are both situations where they don't have the talent they used to, but they're just really no fun to play. You know, New England took Dallas to overtime, and then they beat up on the Chargers this week. And I'm even more impressed with what the Saints did. I mean, they were heavy underdogs to Tampa Bay, as it were. They lose their starting quarterback. You know, I don't think anybody had missed Trevor Siemian. He was excited to see him play. And they find a way to beat Tampa Bay and to make, you know, Tom Brady. I mean, Brady did have the four touchdown passes, but they've defended Brady better than anybody has since Brady's gone to Tampa. So just a ton of respect for Sean Payton. It hasn't been pretty every week. I mean, it was shocking when they lost to the Giants at home and everything. But he doesn't have the same pieces that he's had in previous years. And to have them on the inside of the playoff cut line, I think, is very impressive. I want to get Taysom Hill on my team. I don't know if I can use him in week nine, but I want to get Taysom Hill on my team. And Siemian, Siemian, very low YPA. There isn't great receiver talent here. We like Hill because he has a rushing backboard. Siemian doesn't have that. I'm not going to bid on Siemian proactively unless it's a league where we need multiple starters. I don't think Simeon's going to have much fantasy juice at all, but Taysom Hill will at some point this year.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. The thing, and it's not like we haven't discussed it before, but the thing with the Saints passing attack is you look at the box score at the end of the day and they haven't thrown the ball that much. And it's like eight guys who have between one and three receptions and nobody ever looks like a star. And just like trying to chase any player out of a mix like that is sort of a fool's errand. So I'm not that interested in Siemian either. And Taysom Hill, I think, is the sort of long range play there if you want to take a flyer and a quarterback. And he's, you know, especially after missing a bunch of games, he's out there in a bunch of Superflex leagues. Like, this isn't one of those quarterbacks who is not available in your Superflex format. He's out there. So he's definitely one to take a look at. Other guys that I listed as potential streaming options for the week ahead, this is really ugly, but there's one fun name to talk about. Mention Tua Tagovailoa because he's got Houston coming up, and that's been an easy matchup, obviously, all year. We don't yet know when Tyrod Taylor is going to make it back, but if he made it back for Miami, that might be okay. And then just, I don't know, give me your thoughts on Mike White, because there has not been a New York Jet quarterback to pass for 400 yards since Vinny frickin' Testaverde. It's been forever. I don't know. Is Mike White the greatest Jets quarterback since Namath? How long do we have to go back? This is a super fun game. A game that I did not expect to be fun in any way turned out to be an absolute blast.
Yeah, it was. It was fun and interesting that immediately what White was confirmed to be the starter against the Colts. And just, are there any great defenses anyway? I thought Cincinnati was coming in with a defensive reputation, and Mike White shredded it.
Yeah,
there's a fun story. It could go poof at any moment. I think you're actually maybe soft pedaling Tua a little bit. He had played very well prior to the Buffalo game. Now, Buffalo, if there's one defense in the NFL right now that I'm avoiding, at least in the AFC, because I guess the Rams have stocked up nicely, but although they haven't, Rams defense hasn't been great all year, but you know, now they have another piece, and I still respect the names on those jerseys. Buffalo's probably got the best defense in football. I can give Tua a pass for kind of a so-so week 8 game. He was playing well before then. They got Parker back. Gesicki's been playing at a high level. They never seem to be all in on Myles Gaskin. I would think Tua's in line against the Houston defense that we really have nothing good to say about. I think Tua's in line for, you know, 18, 20, 22 fantasy point day, depending on format. And he's the guy. If you certainly needed somebody this week and he was available, he'd be the guy I'd be going after. With White, you just worry that he could turn into a pumpkin, you know, to use the, you know, the Halloween imagery. He could go pumpkin on you at any time. And the Jets, it was only 2 weeks ago that they didn't look like a football team against New England. And we've seen, there's been certain weeks where it's like disband the Jets. The Jets could just not play anymore and nobody would miss them. But we'll always have the Cincinnati game. And, you know, the Jets have sneaky, I wouldn't say they have great skill talent, but, you know, Carter's been a thing and Crowder's playing well. Hopefully they'll get Corey Davis back, who had a really nice touchdown catch from White in the previous game. I've seen offenses have worse skill talent than the Jets. I mean, I think they're just a little bit below average in skill talent. Mims every once in a while makes a play. I don't think there aren't pieces here. I think they could.
No, we talk about them as if their receiving core is like the Lions, and it's nothing like the Lions. They have real players. Jamison Crowder's been good. Corey Davis has been good. And White just did all this without Corey Davis on the field. That was particularly impressive as well.
We talk about how there just aren't trades at the trade deadline. Jamison Crowder is the type of player like a team like the Chiefs should try to get, or the Saints, or some. There are teams that need receivers. You know, we're all wish casting, like, you know, Allen Robinson get released from purgatory. Although maybe things aren't as bad in Chicago as I thought. But if I were looking for a receiver, if I had lost somebody or had a receiver room that wasn't up to snuff for a playoff contender, I would want a player like Jamison Crowder, who is at a nice, kind of a nice unheralded career. Anyway, I think I like Tua a little bit more than you. We seem to both agree on Taysom Hill. He's going to have value. It just might not be this week. And I just feel like the Mike White story is going to end. It's just a matter of when, and maybe against Indianapolis.
You know, the funny thing about Tua, and I was having this conversation with Pat Fitzmaurice on his podcast week ago. Great guy, great analyst, really good pod. We were discussing Tua this way. I feel like, and I was very bullish on Tua coming into the league. And I feel like the more excited you were about Tua coming into the league, the less excited you've been about these recent performances. Because I thought he made in the Jacksonville and Atlanta games, when, I mean, we knew they were favorable matchups. I thought he made, I don't know, it felt like 100 really cringy throws, you know, sailing balls over guys' heads, putting balls at risk that where it simply didn't need to happen. Like, even while he was having impressive fantasy efforts, they did not strike me as particularly encouraging real life games. But if you were somebody who was pessimistic about Tua, you're like, wow, this guy's throwing for 300 yards and multiple touchdowns. That's pretty cool. Maybe he's better than I thought.
It's interesting because I kind of came to the side of it where I was on the Tua pessimist side. And I felt, as you outlined it nicely, that in recent weeks I've been encouraged by that. It's funny also, when you talked about throwing off target or overthrowing receivers, I had a really bad relapse into a Carson Wentz memory, just watching him play the last 2 weeks where he's he is just throwing hospital balls left and right, man. I mean, Michael Pittman, I don't know if he wants Michael Pittman to break the record. Who's the receiver the Ravens had? He used to get all the pass interference calls. Torrey Smith. Torrey Smith used to be the king of the pass interference flag. And apparently Carson Wentz has said, look, Michael Pittman, we're going to do my goals this year are you to break all those records of Torrey Smith and maybe get you on injury reserve by, you know, December 1st. How does that sound? I mean, just throwing these helium balls. the Niners dropped a bunch of Wentz interceptions 2 weeks ago.
Wentz,
I realized
he could have been picked off 8 times against Tennessee. That was absolutely insane.
You know, it's funny. I get why people were all up in arms with the left-handed throw. He was going to take a safety. He had to do something. He didn't make the greatest audible, you know, in the heat of the moment. But, man, it's hard to watch Carson Wentz. But you're right. I think you were smart with what you said on Pat's podcast. Go listen to that, too. Pat Fitzmaurice is just one of the greatest guys in our industry. I don't know anybody who doesn't feel the way that Andy and I do about him.
Yeah.
But because I was – the glass was half empty for me with Tua, that now I'm starting to see, maybe it's half full, where if you came from the other side of it. The bottom line with this, though, is that I like the talent around him. Gesicki's had a nice breakout season, in part because he's been a receiver. I was impressed. I always try to soft pedal receivers or skilled talent coming back off significant injury or multiple week injury. Devontae Parker didn't look rusty at all. I thought he looked really good in his first game back. Waddle's been okay. Not explosive, maybe, but he's doing some stuff that you can get fantasy juice out of. And Houston, man, if there's not that many teams that have the appeal that Houston does, I think they're going to put up 27, 30, 33 points in this game, and Tua should have a big piece of that.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I definitely like him for the week. I also want to touch on someone who has a bad enough matchup this week that I didn't really want to list him among the plausible ads for week 9. But you wrote about him. You led with him in Booms and Busts. I'm super excited about it. I'm going to paraphrase you here, but I feel like you were basically saying that the NFL is leaving the Tom Brady era and entering the Justin Fields era. Is that fair?
I mean, you guys have, other than Jim McMahon, I mean, who's the best quarterback of your Chicago fandom? Is it Eric Kramer, maybe? I'm trying to think who it's
in
been.
My fandom. Maybe you already know the answer to this.
Bob Davolini, Vince Evans.
Maybe you already know the answer to this trivia question. But do you happen to know what the Bears' single season record for passing yardage is?
Oh, must be Jay Cutler, right? It's Jay Cutler, right?
No, it's Eric Kramer.
Kramer, okay.
And it's 3,838 yards.
Right, in a league where they hand out 4,000 yard seasons at the airport.
Yes. There's going to be like 5 really bad quarterbacks who throw for 4,000 yards this year. The Bears have never even had one of those.
Yeah, I was really encouraged because, and I teased this earlier, but proactive running, trying to, for the first time, the Bears looked like, the game plan looked like, what does Justin Fields do well? How do we set him up to succeed? And I know he took 4 sacks and Salfina was bashing him for that. I mean, he's a rookie. He's going to sometimes... And it's the curse of the playmaker, right? Sometimes Russell Wilson holds the ball too long because he's so freaking magical that he can make a play, and sometimes it turns into a 19-yard sack. You have to live with that. Roethlisberger was like that early in his career. Mobile quarterbacks, playmaking quarterbacks, extend the play quarterbacks. That 4th-and-1 broken field, oh, my God, where's this play going? Oh, well, it's going in the end zone, 22-yard touchdown run. Highlight of the season. Just more confidence. Ideally, you don't want to cut the field in half for an experienced quarterback. But, I mean, for a rookie who can run as well as Fields, I think it was a smart move. I know this is kind of an awkward conversation, but isn't it curious that Fields' best game was on a day where Matt Nagy, we hope he speedy recovery from COVID, but he's not with the team, has no contact, has I don't know how much he shaped the game plan. But it just seemed like we saw Fields in different hands, and we saw Fields handled – or schemed the way he should. Now, I know part of that is just experience. I mean, maybe this game plan wouldn't have made sense when he first got into the starting gig, that you just don't want to overexpose him or throw too much at him. But I thought he was one of the winners on a day where they didn't win. They didn't even cover, Andy. I thought he was one of the winners for sure. And we get, anytime we see a quarterback with 101 rushing yards, not to mention, some of it was scrambling, but a lot of it was designed runs.
It was designed runs. And this is a thing that I discussed with Harmon on the Sunday night pod, that I believe the number that I heard coming into the game was that the Bears had only, there had only been 8 designed runs for Justin Fields. Just a freakishly talented runner, 4.4 speed and all that. Like, it is a clear strength of the player, and they weren't game planning to it at all.
There's two things with that too. You do design runs because he might bust a play. You might be effective with it, but it also makes you harder to defend. Because then the opponent has to think, okay, this is a staple of what they do. You're making yourself, when you take that out of your playbook, you're making yourself so much easier for the defense to game plan and to scheme against you. It was just fun to watch him finally unleashed. Just say, okay, throw him in the deep end and let him swim a little bit. And nice to see some down. He hit a couple of downfield throws to Mooney, which I'd like to be a thing. He could have had a second touchdown. He threw a real fastball to Cole Kmet. Kmet didn't make the catch. I think maybe 7 out of 10 times Kmet probably would catch that ball. But Fields put it in a position where only his player could get it. So it was a safe throw, and it was a throw that still had the upside of potentially being a touchdown. I was really encouraged by it. I watched the whole tape again last night. It was a perfect no. Do we like 4 sacks? Of course not. But I thought it was certainly, I think, 2 strong step forward for this offense.
Yeah, those sacks are going to be there in part because the Bears offensive line has not kept a good pass rusher off of Fields. And it's, you know, a lot of these guys, like, you know, Bosa got back there anytime he wanted to. Miles Garrett was getting back there anytime he wanted to. And they were not, you know, they were not sacks that like arose from Fields trying to extend a play. It was like one Mississippi, boom, you're down in many cases. So not all of them necessarily on him, some of them on him. He has to be aware of ball security when he's in the pocket against elite pass rushers. That's been a little bit of an issue at times. Certainly people, if they haven't seen the touchdown pass that Fields threw, it was super nifty too, because he's rolling out to his left. Hey, let's call a rollout for Justin Fields. He's rolling out to his left and throws an absolute dart. It was a beauty. The end zone camera angle on that is great as well. So I'm encouraged by Fields. Do I want to play him against Pittsburgh? No, I'm afraid I do not.
I will concur on all that.
Well, let's hit wide receiver, where the injuries aren't quite as devastating as they were at other positions. The big one, of course, T.Y. Hilton suffered a concussion. Rough stretch for him, right? He returns from IR, then misses another game. It's just been a medley of issues. Now he's concussed. There's no way he can come back for the Thursday nighter against the Jets. Hopefully he's able to make it back beyond that. The ads that I wrote about, you've mentioned one of them already. I totally understand why Devontae Parker was dropped, right? He missed 3 games. He's a Miami receiver. He's not a superstar. He missed 3 games, and you have to move on. But every game he's played this year, he's seen at least 7 targets, and he came back to 11 targets. He's got Houston coming up. It's a stellar matchup. Devontae Parker, for me, was at least among the priorities. I'm, again, going to pound the table. Here, I'll do it formally. Going to pound the table a little bit for Rashad Bateman. He's coming off a bye. He's already seen 12 targets in 2 games. I think he's really fun. Hunter Renfro, longtime Pianowski favorite, is just, you can put 5 catches for 50 some yards in your back pocket each week, and sometimes it's a little bit better than that. He's got the Giants coming up. Darnell Mooney still hanging out there, right around 40-42% rostered in Yahoo leagues right now. Again, the Pittsburgh matchup is that's no invitation to add a player necessarily. And we're still not seeing extreme passing volume from the Bears. So there's reasons for concern with Mooney. But down the road, there are going to be some spots in which I think you can safely start him. Van Jefferson belongs on this list because with the exception of one big game for Robert Woods, there's not a whole lot of difference in the year to date numbers between Van Jefferson and Robert Woods. Like they're and he plays all the time too. Like Jefferson is on the field 80%+ of the time, playing a ton of snaps. So I think he's interesting. You mentioned Jamison Crowder. He was in the column as well. He's got Indy coming up, and I suppose after the injury to Hilton, Zach Pascal gets interesting in extremely large leagues. I don't know. Sort that field out.
A healthy Parker stands alone on this list for me, and I love the Houston matchup. He's been really good when he's been on the field this year, and he's somebody I had on some teams, but I couldn't play him last week. I'm looking forward to getting him in my lineup. The medium-sized and deeper league guy who interests me is Van Jefferson. Now, DeSean Jackson was playing so infrequently that they actually worked out an agreement that they're going to try to work a trade out, that Jackson really isn't the team's plans. When you get Van Jefferson, you get exposure to Stafford, you get exposure to Sean McVay, and it's a narrow tree. And Jefferson's on the field most of the time. They have 3 receivers. They throw to Higbee a little bit. They have a good running back in Henderson. Michelle gets some touches, but they're not a phone book offense, right? You talk about these teams, yeah. You know, the Browns or the, you know, where they're throwing the 11 guys and 3 tight ends. That's not the Rams. And granted, a lot of their tree is Cooper Kupp and you know, maybe throw it to Kupp. You live with that. But Jefferson's got a shot. He's got a shot at like 80 yards or a touchdown in any given week. And so that, to me, and like if you're playing in a deeper 12 or 14 team format, Jefferson, I'm playing him in our 20 team league, the Charles Robinson league. that we have. I Jefferson's one of my staples there. And again, the calculus is different. You're an 8-teamer, 10-teamer. You're not thinking Jefferson, even in some 12-teamers, depending on the bench size. You have to season that to taste. The thing with Hunter Renfro is you can never be a home run. But during bye weeks and with injuries, maybe a single will do it for you. He might have a double.
Yeah.
In him, I can live with that. I would like Bateman more if he wasn't. I still think the third option in a team. They're throwing more this year, but it's not like Baltimore's an aerial circus, although maybe they should be with those running backs. I can see Bateman. Even Mooney, you don't like him against Pittsburgh, but if you told me any Chicago player had 75 yards receiving, I would always guess Mooney first in 2021. Sure. So that's something. I'm not going to go after Pascal. I just don't want the Carson Wentz experience. And you know, Crowder's kind of maybe the rich man's Renfro, because I think he's a little bit more upside or juice than Renfro does. And hey, Mike White was slinging it, man. So I think Crowder maybe is in good – I'm curious what his yardage prop comes out to be, because I think if it's like 40 or 50 yards, I'll go over it on Thursday just as an entertainment play. Get in on props early, by the way. Frank Schwab and I had a Jonathan Taylor prop that we hit in part because we took it really early, and the thing went up like 10 yards by game day, and then it turned out to be a loser for a lot of people on Sunday. So if you like a prop, try to get in on that early over at BetMGM. But Parker to me is the clear standout on this list.
I like the Jamison Crowder Hunter Renfro comparison. Renfro is kind of like, he's like Kirkland's signature Jamison Crowder, I think. Yeah, I'm still really hoping for a Jamison Crowder relocation. So maybe that happens. The one thing that struck me as you were speaking about Van Jefferson, imagine wanting to leave the Rams. Like, I kind of respect DeSean Jackson at 34, 35 or whatever age he is, you know, still thinking that he should be, I don't know if he thinks he should be an offensive centerpiece, if he thinks he should be a much more high usage receiver. But like, if he just sticks around with the Rams, there's a really good shot you're going to find your way to a Super Bowl. There's a pretty good shot that you're going to make some splash plays along the way too. It just really strikes me as an odd career decision at this stage.
Yeah, but everybody wants to play though. And he knows that his career is near the end. And if you're not getting snaps, I get what you're saying, but he still thinks he can run by people. I mean, what he did make a big catch in the Seattle game feels like that was 100 years ago. I don't think Russell Wilson hadn't been hurt yet, but which tells you how long ago it was. But the thing with Jackson too is he's one of those players that he helps any team just by running a bunch of nine routes, right? I mean, even at his age, just forcing the defense, you know, stretching it out, taking the top off it, even if you don't throw the ball to him that much, it still has a value. So I can see why. I guess they feel like Jefferson can do that too, and they're getting a younger player. And I mean, I see the point you're making, but if Jackson feels like this is his last season, I don't think he wants to spend it on the bench. I think he feels like he can still be somebody's 25, 30 snap guy rather than like a 5 or 10 snap player for the Rams.
Yeah, no, I'm not even saying I don't respect it. I kind of do respect it, thinking that you should still be like a high volume, higher usage player. It's just, you know, they're clear if they're not the front runners in the NFC, they're pretty close to it, and they're obviously all in for this season. I want to talk about tight ends, but I'm not super excited about any of the tight ends I'm about to mention. I will say that I think Week 8 was a bit of a victory for the people who chase targets at this position and not the people who chase touchdowns, because all those guys like Hunter Henry and Uzama and Mo Ali Cox, who are seeing like 3 targets a game and were living on touchdowns, None of them did anything because they don't see volume. It's great. It's great when they score, but when they don't score, it's 2 catches and 19 yards and they're not helping you. So, but I mean, hey, this is a really difficult position. You were a little bit better off if you were chasing the guys that at least see volume. The one notable injury, I believe, this week at this position, Rob Gronkowski returned. He saw a target in the end zone and shortly thereafter developed back spasms and had to exit the game. So not sure when we're going to see Gronk again. That's a shame. Obviously, that team is really deep in terms of skill players. So, but it's, you're also going to miss Antonio Brown. You're going to miss Rob Gronkowski, no question about it. Guys that I mentioned in the column, not that I feel stellar about him, but Pat Freiermuth, rookie, made a brilliant touchdown catch for the Steelers. His volume has been there. He's turned into like a 5 to 7 target guy. Pianowski favorite Tyler Conklin had another decent target total. Relatively quiet game. He's got Baltimore coming up. That's not an ideal matchup, but again, volume has been there to some extent. And also mentioned Dan Arnold coming off a weirdly huge target game. 10 targets, something like that. 8 catches. Really productive game. Unfortunately, he's tied to an offense that is just almost unwatchable, and he's got Buffalo coming up.
First thing I want to say with Gronk, with the back spasms, is that there's no right answer with the other tight ends if Gronkowski can't go. So you know, stop it with Cam Brate, stop it with O.J. Howard. They have so much receiver talent, even on weeks where Antonio Brown doesn't play. I mean, you saw Tyler Johnson made some plays last week. Brady threw a touchdown pass to a player I'd never heard of. They have good depth at running back. There isn't a right answer at tight end in Tampa Bay if it's not Gronkowski. So I'm not going to go after even like $10 DFS. I'm not playing, you know, minimum salary O.J. Howard or $12 Cameron Brate. That's off my radar. I was like all the tight ends you mentioned, though. Ben Roethlisberger needs easy throws, and what's easier than throwing to a guy like Freiermuth, who's just the biggest guy in the field, right? And
yep.
Nifty touchdown. He had draft pedigree coming into the NFL, and sounds like Ebron, you know, is dinged up. He didn't play this week, and if I were the Steelers, I would just go make Freiermuth the featured tight end anyway, at least in the passing game. So I'm not sure what his blocking metrics come out as, but like him, you know, Conklin's one of those guys. He's kind of a little bit like a Renfrow, where he can't be a home run, but if you're just looking to get like 30 to 50 yards and maybe, you know, once in a while, like a 65 yard gain with a touchdown, Conklin can do that. Pretty narrow tree in Minnesota. It's always going to be about the three amigos. It's going to be about their featured back, and it's going to be Cook, and it's going to be about Thielen and Jefferson. Quiet game for Jefferson Sunday, but Conklin gets the scraps that are left. He's basically turned into probably about 65 or 70% of what we thought Irv Smith would be, maybe 80%. And that's not bad.
Yeah.
Arnold has – I'm impressed that Arnold's gotten comfortable with Jacksonville's offense and with Lawrence so quickly after being traded. And as Kevin Payne likes to point out, Sam Darnold has not been the same since they traded Dan Arnold. I wonder what's going on with that. But don't like the Buffalo draw. But, you know, Jacksonville, I guess we're never going to see it. Not with Urban Meyer. We're never going to see it with some of the receivers we want, right? Dan Arnold is every week is like first or second, it feels like, on targets on this team. You didn't mention Agnew. I guess in a deeper league, he can be a wide receiver pickup in Jacksonville, but they can't seem to get Chenault going. Jones is a good player, but he's certainly not an every week star. He's like a wide receiver three more than not. I think Arnold has value, and he's going to be in the top 15 in my tight end rankings. And, you know, if he shows a little bit more consistency, maybe he'll creep into the top 12, and that's a starter in most leagues. So I think you mentioned the right guys. Hopefully you already have a good tight end situation, because I can't recommend any of these players with supreme confidence, but I think they're all plausible starters in week 9.
Yeah, let's talk drops. Let's talk about the players that we're kicking to the curb to add any or all of these players. Why don't you get us started with with somebody you name dropped earlier?
Yeah, I want to drop Nick Sirianni. You know, off a big win against the Lions, drop him in your coaching leagues. Look, Kenneth Gainwell.
You ever played in a coaching league, by the way? I used to play in a fantasy league that awarded something like you drafted head coaches. And I don't even remember who I had. It was so long ago. But you got like 5 points for a win.
Salfino runs the playoff contest where you draft a coach. The playoff contest is great because you can only use players once. And you have to decide, am I waiting? Am I saving players for ideal matchups? Am I going to take the points where I can get them? So you kind of have to handicap what outcomes you expect. It's really fun. And in that league, I like leagues that are more creative with like defensive scoring, you know, win differential. I've played in leagues that had win differential as a category, or you get points for a win, you get penalized for a loss. And then at least there's a little bit more skill in that position than like, okay, who got lucky with a pick six or a strip sack that turned into a touchdown, whatever. But Gainwell, I believe, had one carry until the fourth quarter. And it's not like Boston Scott and Jordan Howard, you know, they're not like the modern day Thunder and Lightning here. You know, we're not going to be seeing Canton speeches from those guys. So I got to figure Gainwell, he doesn't have any projectable volume into week 9, right? He looks like the third back here. And remember Jalen Hurts, a quiet game in week 8, but Jalen Hurts is always a multi-feed this offense too. And usually when there's a rushing
even
touchdown.
In a quiet game, Jalen Hurts led the Eagles in rushing in week
crazy,
eight,
right?
Just for the record.
Yeah, so I mean, so when you consider Hurts is partially a running back too, Gainwell's fourth in line to get carries. That means cut. I can't wait until the story develops. And even if Gainwell were to, you know, be anointed the starter or, you know, have something, some path to where we could project him actively again, Sirianni could always just veer off the road, you know, 15 minutes in and junk the running game on you. You know, I know Gainwell showed some chops in the passing game, but this is an offense I don't want to invest in. I still don't really trust Hurts. he dominates most weeks, dominates the touches, dominates the rushing touchdowns. I think Gainwell's an easy drop for me.
Yeah, I am in my typical cowardly fashion in this segment. I'm gonna discuss a group of players that I don't have any investment in at this stage, and so this doesn't hurt me in any way. This doesn't help me in any way. But
Victory lap is flashing. Okay, you're thinking Barron's victory.
Yeah,
lap.
A lot of players have done me wrong this year, but no Browns receiver has done me wrong. I haven't really stockpiled those guys. I feel like maybe you've actually already discussed Odell Beckham as a drop. I just want to underscore the fact that. You know, I like credit to Baker Mayfield for even playing. I'm not sure he should have been out there, but I mean, hey, you're the Browns quarterback. You're going to play in a Browns Steelers game, I suppose, if you can even walk. It was so, you know, good on him for fighting through the injury. He's got 6 touchdown passes on the season through 7 games. It's been not real rough. We know they don't want to throw the ball, really. Like, you know, even with a perfectly healthy Baker Mayfield, they want to run the ball 40 times and they want to pass it 20 times. And, you know, that's just not. You can be prime Odell Beckham. You're not going to have a lot of 10 catch games in that environment. You're not going to have a lot of 6 catch games in that environment. And we're not dealing with prime Odell Beckham. Jarvis Landry also playing through injury. There's just, you know, I feel like a lot of fantasy managers spent the early part of the season trying to chase whichever Browns receiver had just scored a touchdown, right? Whether it was Njoku, whether it was Peoples-Jones, and like, we got to just get off this thing. You know, they're going to throw one touchdown pass a week, maybe. Baker's not even quite at that rate on the season. So you just can't chase those scores. It's going to be a low volume. I mean, Baker hasn't thrown the ball more than 33 times in any game. They don't want to get to 30 pass attempts. That's just not who they want to be. So I find it just extremely difficult to roster any Browns receiver at this, any Brown who isn't Nick Chubb at this stage.
I mean, with Beckham, it comes down to, we care about the numbers and not the names. Odell Beckham is a name. He had a really splashy time in New York. And it's just so funny. We were talking last week about, please don't drop Kadarius Toney, who reminds us of Odell Beckham, right? With that lateral agility and just that, some of those wild plays, even the cadence of their rookie years where they weren't ready to play right away, but then they came on and made an explosion. I mean, you know, get the next Odell Beckham, which maybe is Kadarius Toney. And I know with a player like Beckham, it's just, you look at it and like, am I really dropping Odell Beckham? But here's the thing.
I know you don't
have the confidence to start him. And if you throw him out in trades, or if you even, as I always say, throw your whole receiver room out in trades and see who they want to come to. Nobody's offering you anything for Odell Beckham. Well, I got a second defense. You want that, you know? Maybe somebody will offer you, you know, one of the tight ends we just talked about. Maybe you can get Tyler Conklin for OBJ. And you know what? Maybe you should take it. You can't get hung up on the names. You can't get hung up on the fact that Beckham won a league for you in 2014. You know, it doesn't matter now. And as you said, Cleveland does 2 things that are really bad for fantasy value. 1, they don't throw a lot of passes. And 2, they throw it to 11 different guys. They throw it to 3 tight ends.
Yes, exactly.
You know, so it's again, you're trying to spin that spinner and hope it lands on your guy. Beckham, I don't know, maybe one of these weeks out of nowhere, they'll have a throwback game and he'll have like 14 touches or something, 14 targets or whatever. Even then it might go for 3 catches. I wonder, you know, it's fair to wonder if did Derrick Henry fall, you know, did the attrition catch up? Did the workload catch up to Derrick Henry? I wonder if the commercial workload has caught up to Baker Mayfield, right? If this isn't really things that, you know, really not really injury, but he's just the workload of the commercials and all the different call times and all the different traveling to different venues, learning scripts. You think it's hard to learn a playbook? You know, some of those progressive commercials, you know, with the rewrites and everything, you know, does he have audible responsibility? Can he change the call at the line of scrimmage? You know, no,
I would actually love to know how much of that is ad-libbed by Baker Mayfield, because he has he's a pretty good quarterback. He's a great corporate pitchman.
Yeah. I mean, if he could just be a little bit more successful as a player, he could be like a Saturday Night Live host or something like that. I mean, he did win a Heisman Trophy,
call.
So that adds some cachet to your thing. But yeah, you're right. Beckham, don't get hung up on the names. And you ought to drop anybody on the Cleveland Browns, as you said, offense, other than Nick Chubb. I mean, you don't have to wait for Kareem Hunt. Jarvis Landry, very droppable, just like the pass he dropped in the fourth quarter. is it true that, I think since the Browns have reopened business in that new stadium, isn't Ben Roethlisberger the biggest winner there, which is just crazy for a quarterback any player, including all the Browns quarterbacks?
That feels right. I can't, you know, I can't fact check that.
There's no need to fact check it. Just assume it's right. It's like a Ricky Henderson story, right? You don't need to fact check it. You just want to believe that it's true. I just want to believe that's true, whether or not it is. You know, in fact, I think the Browns were so soul-crushing in their loss this week. I think Joe Posnanski, who writes a Cleveland Browns column, he just doesn't want to write it anymore. I read the first half of his column. He's like, I just don't want to write this piece anymore. This is a guy who lived through Red Right 88, Brian Sipe. He lived through the drive. He lived through the fumble. You know, this guy's got Ohio – Cleveland roots in his blood, and he doesn't want to write about the Browns anymore. It was the 2020. He lived through Hugh Jackson and you know Freddie Kitchens, and it's the 2021 Browns that have broken him. If that doesn't encourage you,
we'll
to
always
drop
have the Derek Anderson, Braylon Edwards Browns though.
Hey, Braylon Edwards in 16 touchdown season. Yeah, that was a fun year. 2007, I believe that was, where almost every one of their games, they had a bunch of overtime games or a bunch of Alcoa fantastic finish games. That was a really fun team.
All right, we'll leave it there this week. I hope we helped you out in just a brutal
Probably
week
not.
For injuries. Just a really, really rough week. That is going to do it for this episode. We're happy to keep the conversation going on Twitter. However, you can follow me at Andy Behrens. Please follow him at Scott_Pianowski for fantasy news and analysis from the entire squad. Make sure you're also following at Yahoo Fantasy. And if you haven't checked it out yet, Frank Schwab, the great Frank Schwab, and Charles Robinson talk about the week of the backup QB. Cooper Rush, Trevor Siemian, Mike White, Geno Smith. Ugh, the cast of just fabulous names. They talk about all those guys in the latest episode of You Pod to Win the Game. Search for it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You should definitely be subscribing to that thing. Scott will be back tomorrow with the aforementioned Frank Schwab, who's on every podcast all of the time, for the betting preview of Week 9 in the NFL. And until then, we are out.